Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Richard Wolff, who is a Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and is currently a visiting professor in the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School University in New York City. Richard Wolff is the author of the new book, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Richard Wolff.
Thank you very much, Ian.
And it looks as though capitalism and cronyism and corruption were challenged in the elections yesterday in Greece. Syriza came out of nowhere in the last elections, and now in this current one on Sunday, they received 27% of the vote. I spoke with a young Greek-American artist who was at a party for Syriza, and she voted for Syriza. And it was very poignant talking to her because it's really generational. This is about the youth unemployment of 60%, and it's over 50% in Spain. And these young people are saying, why should our futures be stolen? Why should we be mortgaged to a bunch of crooked politicians who ruined our economies?
Yes, I think the line of development in politics in Europe right now is absolutely wonderful and astonishing in ways that few of us could have foreseen. Yesterday, there were elections in Greece, as you say. There were similarly elections completing the election cycle in France and handing the Socialist Party in France the most complete control of the presidency, the upper and lower houses of the parliament that they've probably ever seen, in a election clearly voting no on the austerity programs of their predecessor, Sarkozy. And in Greece, Syriza is basically a voice well to the left of the French Socialist Party that is also saying, as you put it, that the whole capitalist system is one that they are simply not willing to tolerate. Not the crisis it delivered to them 5 years ago, not the bailouts of big corporations and banks that bypassed most Greek citizens, and now for sure not the austerity in which they're being asked to pay the cost of a bailout broken system that didn't help them in the first place. It's really too much, and you're seeing the political result.
So what are we seeing here, Richard Wolff? Are we seeing a resurgence of the radical left, as some have described, or are we seeing a last-ditch attempt to save social democracy?
Well, I think it's both. I think you're seeing in Syriza and the also important position played by the Greek Communist Party, which Western media refused to cover, but is an important part of Greek politics. You see in their strength, voting strength, membership strength, political action strength, a resurgence of the left and also a new surge of the left, drawing on the new generation of people, but drawing on a changed situation. Capitalism has been a disaster for 5 years. It is not delivering the goods. It's mostly, for most people, delivering one bad after another. And the tolerability and the acceptance and the sense that there's no real alternative, all of those are fading. It should be noted that even though the New Democracy Party won, that the old Greek politics, in which the New Democracy and the Socialist Party kind of played musical chairs with running Greek society, that's over. Those two parties together cannot even get half the vote combined, let alone the kinds of votes they used to have. And most of the rest of the space has been taken up by a left that is very critical, not only of the crisis, but of a system that keeps functioning in this unacceptable way.
And, of course, you have to add the 7% vote that went to the neo-Nazis, the New Dawn Party, as it's called.
Absolutely. Whenever capitalism, it's part of the strange dysfunctionality of the system, when it breaks down, when the illusion that it is an engine of progress and an engine of prosperity breaks down and goes into sharp reverse, then, of course, there will be people whose anger, whose upset, whose sense of betrayal moves them to the right instead of the left, who look for scapegoats. Why is this happening to our country, to my job, to my family, to my community? And then there are always voices to offer things like a racial minority, a religious minority, immigrants, bankers, you know, anything but the critique of the system. one of the most important contributions Syriza is making, and this goes beyond Greece, is to put the matter of the system itself as the problem on the agenda for debate and on the agenda for social change.
Again, I'm speaking with Richard Wolff, who's a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and currently a visiting professor in the graduate program for international affairs at the New School University in New York City. He's the author of the new book, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism. Now, one of the great ironies here is that, of course, that Greece was the first battleground in the beginning of the Cold War, the post-World War II era, where Truman intervened and the communists looked like they might take over the country. What followed that, along with the Marshall Plan, was the building of social democracies in Europe and in Japan, who have benefits for their citizens that we in the United States don't have, like health care, et cetera, which is now under threat from the Supreme Court. It's always struck me as an extraordinary irony that the U.S. exported social democracy and laid the foundations for these prosperous countries today like Germany, Italy, Spain. Not that, I mean, they're in trouble now, but they've survived for some time under social democracy, France, where the citizens have tremendous benefits that we in the United States can only dream of. And what little benefits we have here in the United States in terms of pensions and with Social Security and medical help through Medicare, they're under threat. So what seems to be happening now is that these arrangements are over, the Cold War construct is over, and that the social safety nets are being deliberately eviscerated. Because, in other words, the Ryan plan that we have here in the United States to rip up what's left of our social safety net is alive and well in Europe as well.
Yes, I think you're seeing exactly that. You're seeing that large corporations in their typical capitalist competition, say between the United States and Europe, found over the last 25 years that they could make a lot more money, for example, by closing their operations in the United States and in parts of Europe and in moving them to China or to India or to other low-wage areas, and keeping the difference in the value of what they produced and the low wages they paid in the form of a record level of profits. And we're now seeing, in a sense, the fallout, the consequences. The best way to break social democracy, the best way to break the union movement in the United States, for that matter, was to move production away, leave the workers here with nothing, threaten every union that exists that if they don't cave in to what the employer wants, the employer will move production to where it's even more profitable in the third world, etc., etc. And you're now seeing the consequences of that. But the answer to that has always been and is today whether the mass of people, the majority, permit that kind of behavior. Do you permit a corporation to get up and leave and go to another place to make more profits with all the social consequences, destructive ones, left behind, for which these companies have no responsibility, no obligation? If you do, then you will experience the kind of economic long-term decline that now confronts Europe and that is so obvious in places like Spain and Portugal and Ireland and Hungary and, of course, Greece. And I think what's being understood, it's taken 4 or 5 years of this crisis, but what's being understood is that the whole quality of job and work life and community is in play now, and that if the current directions and leaderships are left alone, then the kind of suffering of the Greek people will be replicated in Spain and countless other countries, by the way, not exempting the United States, because it's under the exact same pressures. So I think, in a sense, even people who can't say the words kind of understand that something of the nature of an ancient Greek drama is being played out again in that part of the world.
But what explains the fact that the Germans have the most successful export economy in the world? And again, going back to the Marshall Plan, they, for example, half of the boards of directors of German companies are members of unions. So you have a very exemplary kind of social democracy there. But what the Germans don't seem to appreciate is that the euro has helped their export markets enormously. The Greeks bought Mercedes and BMWs, as did the Spaniards and the Portuguese and everybody else around the world. So what explains the idea that the German elite would want to shred the social contracts in the southern tier, in the Catholic parts of Europe, and at the same time diminish their export markets?
Well, it's very interesting. The first thing about Germany, and I'm very glad you picked it, has to do with driving home the point. American conservatives, never one to pay too terribly close attention to the facts, like to suggest that Europe is now catching up with the wisdom of the United States in shredding the safety net, because they must. I always like to point out that the most powerful economy in Europe, the German, is not only not shredding the safety net, which is much larger there than it has been almost anywhere else, but in many ways is preserving it, but that at the same time, that is not a bad strategy for weathering a crisis. It's actually an excellent one. Germany's an example of a society that is doing better than the United States, markedly better, through this crisis, even though they do, in fact, maintain a much more generous safety net for the mass of their people than we do. But to answer the question why the Germans have done so well, I think the unspoken part of that story that people have to recognize, and I am always a little mystified why they don't, is the fact that probably the Germans owe this to communism. And let me explain. Germany has been recently unified. It was a separated country between East and West for most of the post-war period. During that time, until the reunification in the 1990s, the East Germans became the most successful industrialization story of the entire Eastern Europe. Over the 40 or 50 years since the end of World War II, East Germany's people became a highly skilled, highly disciplined industrial working class, one of the most productive, most skilled, most disciplined, probably in the world. But they were paid a much lower wage level than their counterparts in Western Germany for all kinds of historical reasons. Eastern Germany was always a relatively poorer part of Germany than the West. When unification happened, basically the dissolution of East Germany delivered into the hands of employers in Western Germany an unbelievable gift, a huge group of highly skilled, highly disciplined industrial workers who spoke the same language. No one else has had this gift. The United States gets people from Latin America, for example, but they do not speak English. They are not highly educated. They are not highly skilled. They are poor. The Japanese get all kinds of immigrants from East Asia. It's a very similar story. The Germans, unlike any other country in Europe, for that matter, was the beneficiary of a huge, trained industrial work class whose wages were several times lower than the average in Western Germany. They have been slowly integrated into West German capitalism, sometimes by investments being made in what was before East Germany, but in many cases, people moving through family connections with the same culture and language into Western Germany, enabling the capitalists there to get workers on the cheap and to be able, therefore, to keep their prices relatively lower, not rising as fast as they did everywhere else in Europe. And so the unified euro, the unified common market, presented the Germans with a huge increase in their market at the same time that they got a huge gift of inexpensive, highly trained, skilled workers. Once you understand that combination and that it was not shared by any other European country, you can see why the Germans were able to do well. They like to tell us it has to do with German ingenuity or brilliant political leadership, but that's really silly. They got something out of the breakdown of Eastern Europe that was better for them than anything comparable won by anybody they were competing with, and the results are what you see.
And, of course, Angela Merkel herself comes from the East.
Absolutely. Couldn't be a better person to literally symbolize the whole integration of the East to the advantage of German capitalism in its competitions everywhere else. But the danger for Germany, if I can say a word about it, is that you are now galvanizing all of Southern Europe and an increasing portion of Eastern Europe as well into enemies of Germany, seeing what the Germans have done is to take advantage of the unification of Europe at the expense of all the other countries that unified with Europe, keeping the game going by taking their monstrous profits and lending them to the Spanish and the Italians and the Greeks to keep the kind of the thing going, a little bit like American corporations lent so much money to their own workers over the last 40 years, and the bubble eventually burst to everyone's dismay. I think the Germans are making a political grotesque miscalculation in underestimating the kind of opposition building to them in that unified Europe, which may not survive as a unity because of it.
So it's an interesting irony, isn't it, Richard Wolff, that you just mentioned that the communists helped the German capitalists and the whole birth of social democracy in Europe, which we don't have in it. Our elite denied us social democracy here in the United States, but exported it during the Marshall Plan as a way to stop the communists taking over Europe. I find it deeply ironic. But when I spoke with the young Syriza voter on Sunday, who was at a party for the Syriza voters, they were basically talking about their future being stolen and how they wanted some justice and wanted nothing to do with the crooks that got the country into this mess, and the idea that the lenders in the big banks in Germany or elsewhere have never been punished and the borrowers were irresponsible, crooked Greek politicians, and then they're all stuck with the bill. They may be anti-capitalists, but she didn't sound like a communist. So what kind of political arrangement is going to emerge with the new left in Greece and perhaps in Spain and other countries in response to what's happening?
Well, I think that's a very big question, and I think time will tell. I think we're at the early stages. It has taken Europeans 3-4 years of being in what we might call shock and awe, watching the safety net they thought was secure prove to be insecure, watching a capitalism that celebrated its ability to provide social welfare, removing or trying to remove the social welfare. It's taken them a time to overcome the notion, as Margaret Thatcher liked to say, that there is no alternative to capitalism, and come to the realization that given what capitalism's offering them, capitalism itself is no longer an acceptable alternative, and that they will have to look for others. But you're talking about a generation that has been, if not depoliticized, very badly turned off by the conventional politics. We should remember that over the last 2 years, in 2010 and 11, basically, the austerity in a place like Greece was imposed by a government of a socialist party, probably set back the cause of socialism in Greece, as the similar things are happening in other countries, for generations to come, by having turned on the working class they're supposed to represent. And I think you're seeing a dissolution of conventional ideas in politics. And so we're at that early stage where a clear notion of what the alternative is, sort of in the way that in the earlier part of the late part of the 19th and early part of the 20th century, communists had a fairly good idea, and even socialists did, that they wanted public ownership instead of private, that they wanted economic planning instead of markets. Those kinds of clear demarcations, those have dissolved along with all of the claims and pretenses of modern capitalism, and you're in a period of searching and looking for where to go on the part of a people who largely withdrew from intense political participation because they didn't think they needed to. They didn't think their welfare depended on it. They took for granted what had been achieved. All of that is dissolving now, and that's what makes the Syriza vote so interesting, that in their first kind of massive breaking away from conventional politics, the overwhelming majority of people willing to break away from the old conventions are moving sharply to the left. And that is a very important sign, just as in a different way, that's true in France as well. They're going to give their old socialist party what I believe is one more chance. If they do not deliver in a systematic way on the promises that François Hollande and the others in France made, then to their left is the French equivalent of Syriza, and that is the Front de Gauche, the left front, which didn't do so badly at all in this latest election, much better than had been predicted as little as 6 months ago. And I think you see waiting in the wings a further sign of the disaffection of huge portions, particularly of younger people, which has enormous implications into the future, moving to the left out of a sheer unwillingness to continue to accept the benefits and losses that capitalism dishes out.
Well, just in closing though, Richard Wolff, it's clear that capitalism is failing, but it's also clear that communism, at least of what we saw in the Soviet Union and People's Republic of China, have failed. You have gangster capitalism in Russia, and you have a kind of cruel crony capitalism in China. Where you're not suggesting that the communists are coming back.
No, I'm not. I think that whatever the reality is, and it may well be as you describe it, the image in most Western and even most third world countries of what is going on in places like Russia and China, even before the end of the USSR, does make that not the model that people are going to look to, not the model that people are going to follow. It's not that the notions of social ownership of means of production and planning are to be rejected. I don't think that's going to happen. I think you're going to see more and more of that. Indeed, the capitalist countries themselves are moving in that direction. But I think you're quite right. That's going to have to be a new and different image of what the alternative to modern capitalism is. And I think I can tell you what that will be from the signs already developing. And that will be a focus on a new alternative that doesn't look to what the government is going to do or not do, not to how the government owns things or how the government plans things. That the new focus will be at the micro level, the level of the enterprise itself. And the demand is going to be to end the old, undemocratic, capitalist organization of production. No more handful of major shareholders selecting a board of directors who makes all the decisions. What to buy, what to produce, how to produce, where to produce, what to do with the profits. That all has to change. That those decisions have to be made collectively and democratically, not only by the workers in each enterprise, but in consultation and co-direction, if you like, with the residents in the communities interacting with those enterprises. The democratization of work and enterprise is, I believe, going to be the defining focus that distinguishes 21st century socialism from its predecessors over the last 100 years.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Richard Wolff.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Again, I've been speaking with Richard Wolff, who is a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst and is currently a visiting professor in the Graduate Program for International Affairs at the New School University in New York City. He's the author of the new book, Occupy the Economy, Challenging Capitalism. And again, I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Chris Scheid. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another background briefing. Bye for now. Just